For Lee, surrealism was much more than an art movement. It was a way of life because it embodied the importance of peace and freedom and justice in life. And that was something she felt very acutely about.
Hallo und willkommen. Das ist der Kunstpodcast mit Themen und Geschichten aus der Hamburger Kunstwelt. Hamburg Arts, der Kunstpodcast. Und ich bin Kai Detlefs, Journalist aus Hamburg. Wir reden heute über Lee Miller. Sie gilt als eine der wichtigsten Fotografinnen des 20. Jahrhunderts. Lee Miller ist ein Phänomen. Im New York der 20er Jahre beginnt sie als Model. Auf Anhieb schafft sie es auf die Titelseiten der Vogue. Dann die nächste Station. Lee Miller geht nach Paris, trifft dort Man Ray, ein Star im Kunstbetrieb. Mit Man Ray arbeitet sie künstlerisch, surrealistisch und weiterhin als Model. Dann startet Lee Miller richtig durch. Sie beginnt zu fotografieren und das professionell. Sie macht Porträts, fotografiert Mode und Lee Miller eröffnet ihr eigenes Studio. Erst in Paris, dann in New York. Die Karriere ist einzigartig. Die junge Amerikanerin ist Top-Fotografin, Supermodel, Künstlerin, Journalistin, dann Kriegsreporterin. Denn im Zweiten Weltkrieg dokumentiert Lee Miller die deutschen Angriffe auf London. Sie zeigt später das Grauen in den Konzentrationslagern. Das Bucerius Kunstforum zeigt jetzt viele ihrer Werke in einer umfassenden Ausstellung. Der Titel: Lee Miller, Fotografin zwischen Krieg und Glamour. Zur Eröffnung sind zwei besondere Gäste eingeladen. Der Sohn von Lee Miller, das ist Anthony Penrose, und seine Tochter, Amy Bouhassain. Mit ihnen möchte ich reden, denn beide kümmern sich um das künstlerische Werk und den Nachlass von Lee Miller, dort, wo die Fotografin zuletzt lange gelebt hat, in East Sussex, südlich von London. Hier der erste Teil des Gesprächs, das wir auf Englisch geführt haben. Let's begin in New York, where Lee Miller started as a model. She even became a supermodel. Now, Anthony, how did all this happen and how did your mother make it to New York?
She never set out to be a model. She was an art student in New York and she was discovered by Condé Nast, who had her photographed by Edward Steichen and then drawn by Georges Lepape. And it was that drawing by Lepape of her face that put her on the front cover of Vogue, March 1927. And that really set her up as being the face that everybody wanted modeling their couture at that time.
I mean, that's quite a lot of chance, right? I mean, she wasn't even 20 years old and she became a supermodel, right?
Yeah, she was not yet 20 years old and she was coast to coast across America in Vogue and Vanity Fair. And that was really an amazing start to a career.
And so in other words, she was, let's say, a beauty, or she had this face to become a model?
She was a great beauty, but what actually was in her favour was that she was quite athletic. She was, in fact, very interested in dance and things like that. And so she had that sort of fit look to her. And she was tall for a woman at that time. And she had this lovely face, which was very photogenic from whichever angle anybody chose. So she had a lot in her favour. But more importantly, it was just the right face for that time. The whole modernism thing was coming in, and she was it. She was that, exactly embodying all of those characteristics.
How about her attitude and her beliefs? She was this kind of an independent and confident person, right?
So I think that her attitude stems right back from when she was growing up. Her parents, which is incredible for those days, actually treated her the same as her brothers. I mean, you're talking about an age where little girls were brought up to cook and clean and be mothers, and that was it. Whereas her parents treated her the same as her brothers. She had an older brother and a younger brother. Her dad was an engineer. He encouraged her to invent and make go-karts. They gave her a chemistry set. And that kind of basis of equality within her family underscored some of her beliefs and her attitude towards the kind of patriarchal society and the kind of male domination that she actually ended up hitting against throughout her career.
And Amy, this was some sort of feminist attitude?
I wouldn't say it's feminist. I say it's more equality. She was brought up thinking that not that she was inferior and that she was just there to cook and clean and be a mother, but that she could be the same as her brothers. And I think it, in a way, that is a feminist view, but it's really more of a view of equity from her point of view. And in her later life, if you'd asked her if she was a feminist, she probably would have said she wasn't. But then at that time, feminists was different. There's different forms of feminists nowadays.
What role did she have as a model, and what kind of model was Lee Miller?
She modeled everything from haute couture, beautiful evening dresses, to sportswear, to casual wear. And mainly she was in Vogue or Vanity Fair, both of them owned by Condé Nast. But then she pops up again in other publications, you know, quite randomly all over the place.
Okay, now let's talk about the years with the iconic artist and photographer Man Ray in Paris. I mean, how did they find each other?
Well, originally she came to Europe because she wanted to go to Italy and study the great artists. But then she says in later interviews that she suddenly quickly realized that all the good pictures that were going to be done had been done. So she was going to be a photographer. Luckily for her, Steichen, one of the photographers that had photographed her as a model when she was in New York, knew Man Ray, and he wrote a letter of introduction for her to Man Ray. And she turned up on his doorstep in Paris, only to find he wasn't there, but then went across the road for a drink, and he was there. And she kind of went up to him and announced to him that she was going to be his new student. He said, I don't take students, and anyway, I'm off to Biarritz on my holidays. And she said, I know, and I'm going with you. And she did. And that was the beginning of her becoming his assistant. She was his kind of studio assistant and protege for the first 9 months. And by within a year of being with him, she actually had her own studio in Paris and was operating professionally as a photographer. And one of the first images that appear in the exhibition here is a self-portrait of her, which was actually her first self-portrait where she's modelling fashion that was then, which is by her, of her, and published in American Vogue, and that was in September 1930. So within a year, less than a year of being and working as a photographer, she's getting published in big magazines.
Okay, let me ask you, we're talking about surrealism in art and in photography. What is so striking and so special about this surrealism?
For Lee, surrealism was much more than an art movement. It was a way of life because it embodied the importance of peace and freedom and justice in life. And that was something she felt very acutely about. So when she arrived in Paris, she immediately met many of the Surrealist people, including Man Ray, of course, and she just felt at home with them. She felt comfortable. And their art form and their style and everything was really important because she was not going to be limited by convention. She wasn't going to have anybody tell her how she should see or should photograph. She wanted to be able to invent and to create and to do things in a new and an exciting way. And surrealism offered her all of those opportunities.
I mean, I've just learned that surrealism at this time was in a way dominated by men, right? And by a male view.
Surrealism certainly was dominated by a male view, but there were a lot of very important women surrealists. And it's only now that we're beginning to realize just how significant their contribution to the movement really was.
Anthony, you have been talking about so-called found images in surrealism. There's one picture called The Exploding Hand. Now, what are these found images?
Yes, I love the idea of the found image because the surrealists often talk about the found object, l'objet trouvé. And I think that Lee's style really is summed up as being the found image. She was walking around with her Rolleiflex in Montparnasse, and she would see something and see it in a way that nobody else had seen it. And she would just use the camera to cut it out of real life and give it back to us as an image. So exploding hand, it's the woman, it's the image of a woman's hand on a door handle seen through the glass. And it does look as though her hand is exploding in a little puff of smoke. But actually, it's the doorway to the Guerlain perfume shop. And so many of the clientele have been wearing diamond rings that the diamond rings have scratched this opaque area on the glass that looks like the puff of smoke. Now, most of us would walk right past that without even noticing it. But Lee waited, and she staked it out until the woman with her beautiful manicure and her lovely couture gown put her hand on the handle. And in that moment, very unobtrusively, that soft shutter of the Rolleiflex would go click, and she gives us back that image, her vision of that moment.
And we have the rest of that roll of film, and it's just that one shot. That she didn't do several tries, it's that one image on that roll.
In surrealism, there's a specific technique in photography called, let me get this right, solarization. Anthony, how about this technique?
This was something that Lee Miller and Man Ray discovered for themselves, perhaps without even knowing that it was already been established by Sabatier in about 1840. But the thing was that surrealists love the lucky accident, something which is completely unexpected but gives them a result that they can really enjoy. And this is exactly what happened. And Lee was dish developing some cut negatives, and you have to do this in total darkness. So she was developing in the darkroom in total darkness when suddenly a rat ran over her foot and she let out a shriek and turned on the white light. you don't turn on the white light when you're dish developing negatives. And Man Ray let out a bigger shriek and turned off the white light, grabbed the negatives, dumped them in the fixer, and then when they developed, they found the most extraordinary change had taken place. The deep, dark, black areas had reversed out to being a light colour, leaving a kind of reverse halation around the image. So it was like somebody had drawn a line around the image, separating it from the background. And it was the most extraordinarily beautiful technique. And they both used it right through their professional photographic lives. Lee was still making solarized images in wartime for fashion shots, for Vogue.
When we talk about these years with Man Ray, I mean, how did the business develop of Lee Miller? What did she do? What kind of pictures did she take? And how did her business and her studio develop?
Well, at the time, Man Ray really wanted to focus on his painting rather than his photography. And there's several interviews later in life where she talks about how he wanted to paint and she wanted to take pictures. So a lot of the time, particularly in the early months when she was with him, the first year or so, he would give her his commissions that he didn't want. And she would take them on. Other times she would do his pictures for him and then they were published under his name, which because they paid the bills and she and Man Ray were lovers, so they were just supporting each other as artists. So, I mean, as a photo curator, it's a little bit of a problem because, she asserts this several times in different interviews throughout her life, that she was doing his photography for him. So you could question the authenticity of some Man Ray pictures that have been published in that time. But she was also getting her own commissions. She was, she got to know George Heiningen Hune, who at the time was the head of French Vogue studio. And she was using that studio. She was doing fashion shoots there for him. She was modeling for him as well, which was another way that she had to devise. She didn't, unlike a lot of other early women photographers, who came from wealthy families and took pictures as a project. Lee didn't come from a rich family. she always had to think how she was going to pay the bills and how she was going to support herself in her career. So when she opened her own studio, she had work coming in from Man Ray. She worked as a model to supplement her income. She was doing fashion shots, she was doing advertising shots, and she even on occasion worked for a surgeon in Paris, photographing his operations and recording what he was doing for him. So she would kind of take as many other jobs as she could because she needed to pay the bills.
Okay, can we say, or can you say and trace on what kind of style she developed? What was it?
Well, her personal style, obviously. She had to take pictures that would pay the bills, which would be portraits and advertising pictures. But her private personal style was very much this surrealist found object, the surrealist image. And those pictures started to be exhibited in Paris. And then she sold some to a gallerist in New York called Julian Levy. And he started to loan them to exhibitions in America. And started to build her name over there for her.
Now, talking about the work for this surgeon, I mean, this is the time when she did this famous picture, right, of the breast, right?
The severed breast, yes. So,
who wants to tell the story?
When she'd finished photographing the radical mastectomy operation, and we believe it was for Dr. Dax at the American hospital, but we're not quite sure about this, she took it across Paris on a plate covered with a cloth, and she went to Vogue Studios. And when she was in the studio, she set it up on a tablecloth with a knife and a fork and a spoon as though it was somebody's meal. And she just got two shots off before Heuning and Hune, the studio boss, had a screaming fit and threw her and the breast out into the street. And I've often wondered, what did she intend by this image? And I think it's really an image of protest, because she would have been aware how fascinated men were with her breasts and how much they commodify them, how much they forget that behind that breast there's a woman with a heart and a soul and a brain. And I think she was saying, okay, you like breasts so much, have one. This is what it looks like when it's not part of a woman.
And if you think about Man Ray's work at the time, he was taking pictures of her modelling and he was cutting her head off and showing different parts of her body. And, you know, a lot of other women surrealist artists were just being objectified for the way they looked. And as an intelligent, creative woman, that must have been really quite frustrating when you're wanting to be recognised for your work.
Amy, you once stressed the fact that Lee Miller had this tremendous confidence, being a woman in the old days and building her own studio. So how about this notion of confidence in the life of Lee Miller?
I think she was incredibly driven. And I think because she had this equity from her upbringing, it gave her this background and this basis to operate on, and that built on her confidence. And, you know, when we look at her Paris studio, you see she's learning all the time. She's watching people like Man Ray and how he operates his studio. By the time she closes her Paris studio and she goes to New York, you can track how much, you know, how much information and how much confidence she's got from that experience and how she translates that into the next part of her career, just by looking at the press coverage that she got for herself as she's opening her next studio, which is in New York. Before she's even left Paris, she's got friends and contacts in her network in America that are releasing articles about Lee Miller. And she's learnt that she needs to walk the walk and talk the talk if she's going to be successful, because she plays on the idea of how her photography is exotic because she's coming from a Paris training. She's appealing to, she's going into America in 1932, which is in the middle of a depression, financial depression. And she knows that her market, she's done market research. She knows that she has, if she's going to be successful, she needs the rich ladies of New York to come to her studio and pay for portraits. So she plays on that. And that's the tone of the publicity that she's pushing and that she is getting out in the newspapers that circulate throughout New York State. And she hasn't even, in the first article comes before she's even left Paris. And then it continues. She makes sure that she's got a solo exhibition that's a selling show of her work in New York at the time. And that's an artist who's really thought through how they're going to hit the market. And it's a quite coherent business plan when nobody's taught her in business school what she needs to do. And it really shows her intelligence and the way she's watched and learned from her environment.
I mean, this sounds like a very good marketing and at the same time very good networking, right?
Yeah, yeah. She had an incredible network of people, and she knew how to utilize that, which is, you know, something that artists and photographers today really have to maximize if they're going to get recognized. I mean, it still happens that you have an incredible artist who's terrible at promoting themselves and nobody ever hears about them. But she learned that. And as a woman, I think because she knew it was going to be challenging, she was determined to punch above her weight and make sure that she was a success.